Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Today we're hearing from the Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 10, Chapter 83, entitled Draupadi Meets the Queens of Krishna. Text 27-39. So we can chant 39 responsibly, and I'll chant the rest. And if you like to chant along, it's quite good. Text 27. Divi dundu bayo nedur. Together. Jaya shabda yuta bhuvi. Devascha kushama saram mumucha harsha vidvala. Translation. Kettle drums resounded in the sky and on the earth. People shouted, Jai, Jai! Overjoyed, demigods showered flowers. 28. Tadrangam abhisham aham kala nuporabhyam tadabhyam patigriya pankajovala ratnamalam nutne nivaya paridaya chakushagagriye svavida hasa vadana kavaridrita shrat. Translation. Just then I walked onto the ceremonial ground, the ankle bells on my feet gently tinkling. I was wearing new garments of the finest silk tied with a belt, and I carried a brilliant necklace fashioned of gold and jewels. There was a shy smile on my face and a wreath of flowers in my hair. Purport by the disciples of Srila Prabhupada. Srila Sridhar Swami states that Sri Lakshmana was so excited by remembering how she obtained the Supreme Lord that she forgot her natural shyness and went on to describe her own triumph. 29. Uniya vaktram uru kantala kundala vid gandastalam shirisha hasa kataksha mokshai ragyo niriksha paritai sanakaya murare Amse norakta hridaya nidade svamalam. Translation. I lifted my face, which was encircled by my abundant locks and effulgent from the glow of my and. Does that sound right? Okay. And effulgent from the glow of my earrings. Effulgence, that should be, shouldn't it? Should be effulgence. An effulgence. Okay. From the glow of my earrings reflected from my cheeks, smiling coolly I glanced about. Then, looking around at all the kings, I slowly placed the necklace on the shoulder of Murari, who had captured my heart. 30. Tavan murdanga pataha sankhya berya nakadaya nine dor natanarta kyo nanritu gayaka jagu. Translation. Just then there were loud sounds of conch shells and murdanga, pataha, berry, and anaka drums, as well as other instruments. Men and women began to dance, and singers began to sing. 31. Evamvrite bhagavati mayeshe nripayutapa nasarire jagaseni spardanto hrich jayaturaha. Translation. The leading kings there could not tolerate my having chosen the Supreme Personality of Godhead, O Draupadi. Burning with lust, they became quarrelsome. Purport. Srila Sridhar Swami comments that the contamination of lust led the kings to quarrel foolishly with the Lord, even after seeing his supreme power. 32. Mam tavad ratam aropya haya ratna chatustayam saringam udayamya sanastas tastav ajau chatur buja. Translation. The Lord then placed me on his chariot, drawn by four most excellent horses. Donning his armor and readying his bow, Sharanga, he stood on the chariot, and there on the battleground, he manifested his four arms. Purport. With two of his four arms, according to Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti, Lord Krishna embraced his bride, and with the other two he held his bow and arrows. 33. Darukash chalayamasa kanchano paskaram ratam misatam bubujam ragi murganam murgaradiva. Translation. Daruka drove the Lord's gold-trimmed chariot as the kings looked on, O Queen, like small animals helplessly watching a lion. 34. Tenvasa jananta rajanya nishedam pati kechana samyata udriteshvasa ramasima yata harim. Translation. The kings pursued the Lord like village dogs chasing a lion. Some kings, raising their bows, stationed themselves on the road to stop him as he passed by. 35. Te sanga chuta bano kai krita bavangri kantarai nipetu pradane kechid eke sanjagya dudruvau. Translation. These warriors were deluged by arrows shot from the Lord's bow, Sharanga. Some of the kings fell on the battlefield with severed arms, legs, and necks. The rest gave up the fight and fled. 36. Tata purim yadupatir atyalankritam ravichada tvajapata sitram toranam kutastalim divibuvi chubhishantutam savavishitaranir eva svaketanam. Translation. The Lord of the Yadus then entered his capital city, Kushastali, Dwarka, which is glorified in heaven and on earth. The city was elaborately decorated with flagpoles carrying banners that blocked the sun, and also with splendid archways. As Lord Krishna entered, he appeared like the sun god entering his abode. Purport. The abode of the sun is in the western mountains, where he sets each evening. 37. Pita me pujayamasa surt brahmavi sambhavam maharha vasulankarai sayasana parichadadai. Translation. My father honored his friends, family, and in-laws with priceless clothing and jewelry, and with royal beds, thrones, and other furnishings. 38. Dashi bi sarva sampad bir bate bya rata vaji bi ayudani maharhani dadau purnasya bhaktita. Translation. With devotion he presented the perfectly complete Lord with a number of maidservants bedecked with precious ornaments. Accompanying these maidservants were guards walking on foot and others riding elephants, chariots, and horses. He also gave the Lord extremely valuable weapons. Purport. The Supreme Lord is Purna, perfect and complete in himself. He requires nothing for his satisfaction. Knowing this, a pure devotee makes offerings to the Lord only out of love, bhakti-ta, with no expectation of material profit. And on his part, the Lord happily accepts even a small gift of flowers, tulsi leaves, and water, when it has been offered in love. 39. Please, responsively. Atmaramasya tasyema. Vayam vai grihadasika. Is it? Vayam vai grihadasika. Sarva sangha nivrityada. Tapasacha bhubhuvima. Atmaramasya tasyema. Vayam vai grihadasika. Sarvasanga nivrityada. Tapasacha bhubhuvima. Please chant. Atmaramasya tasyema. Vayam vai grihadasikai. Sarvasanga nivrityada. Tapasacha bhubhuvima. Atmaramasya tasyema. Vayam vai grihadasika. Sarva sangha nivrityada. Tapasata bhubhuvima. Atmaramasya tasyema. Vayam vai grihadasika. Sarva sangha nivrityada. Tapasacha bhubhuvima. Atmaramasya tasyema. Vayam vai grihadasika. Sarva sangha nivrityada. Tapasacha bhubhuvima. Mataji. Atmaramasya tasyema. Vayam vadihadasika. Sarva sangha nivrityada. Tapasacha bhubhuvima. Atmaramasya tasyema. Vayam vai grihadasika. Sarva sangha nivrityada. Tapasavcha bhubhuvima. Atma aramasya. Of the self-satisfied. Tasya. Him. Ima. These vai. These. Vayam. We. Vai. Indeed. Griha. In the home. Dashika. Maid servants. Sarva. All. Sangha. Of material association. Nivritya. By the cessation. Adha. Directly. Tapasa. By austerity. Cha. And. Bhubhuvima. Have become. Translation and purport by the disciples of Srila Prabhupada. Thus, by renouncing all material association and practicing austere penances, we queens have all become personal maidservants of the self-satisfied Supreme Lord. Please repeat. Thus, by renouncing all material association and practicing austere penances, we queens have all become personal maidservants of the self-satisfied Supreme Lord.
Hebron.
In the opinion of Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti, Srimati Lakshmana became embarrassed when she realized that she had been talking about herself. And so she spoke this verse, praising her co-wives. In her humility, Lakshmana claimed that Krishna's queens, unlike ordinary wives, could not bring their husbands under control, and thus they could relate to him only as servile housekeepers. In fact, however, since the Lord's queens are direct expansions of his internal pleasure potency, Kladini Shakti, they fully controlled him with their love. Omagyana Tamalani Dasya Ganjana Shlakaya Chakshur and Militam Nina Tasmai Sri Gurudevena Maha. What is going on in this chapter is that Queen Draupadi is meeting the wives of Krishna. And what are they discussing? What is asked is how the wives became wives of Krishna, how they got Krishna to be their husband. That was what was being discussed. It's just like in devotional life, when you meet a serious devotee, a devotee who is setting a standard of spiritual life, what's the first thing you want to know? Please, who is your guru? How did you, you know, how did you get to where you got? It's natural, you want to know those things. This is very personal, spiritual life. It's an inspiration when you do. We're lucky enough to have the association of devotees who are in the fire of Krishna consciousness, and immediately that question is there. Otherwise, personalism may pervade our relationships, and we have no interest in each other. We don't even, sometimes it's hard to acknowledge other living entities' unconditional right to exist. We don't like to look people in the eyes and accept them. We only accept each other conditionally. This is not a very good position, because actually that's the consciousness of materialistic people, isn't it? We don't want other people to exist. When they're miserable, we're happy. That makes us happy. That's the demoniac consciousness. But as devotees, we really want to associate with other devotees who are happy. This is what we really require in spiritual life. Not only do we need that association, but it is our desire as devotees to make people happy. But it's not such an easy task, because we have, if we remain new devotees, what we call neophyte devotees, what is the problem there of desiring other people's happiness? What is the problem if we remain neophyte devotee? Is there a problem? Can we just go and make people happy or not? Can we legitimately desire their happiness if we're neophyte devotees? Right, okay. Right, so, okay. So, you're saying it's not really possible? Yes. Well, the problem is that as a neophyte devotee, we cannot discriminate. We do not know who is a devotee and who is not a devotee. Now, if we could identify spiritual happiness, we would be able to tell the difference, wouldn't we? I mean, if we recognized spiritual happiness when we saw it, we would know who is a devotee and who is not. There wouldn't be any problem at all. But the problem is, we cannot recognize as neophyte devotees who is spiritually happy and who is not. We do not have that discrimination. It's not like in a material sense, you know, if you think you're a material body, you know, when you have your photograph taken, you have to pose, right? Smile, say cheese. You know, you have to do that. You're not going to be naturally happy. You have to force people to smile. So that's in the material world. You know, happiness is only understood if someone is smiling or is joyful. But it's not like that in spiritual life because, as Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, where is our happiness? It is not coming from external sense objects. We don't need external material sense objects to give us happiness. It comes from within. One who is active within, rejoices within, whose aim is in, that person is liberated in the Supreme. And he attains the Supreme, right? Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita. So happiness, spiritual happiness, is within. It's not necessarily, it's not made to order. Like as devotees, sometimes we have to smile for photographs so we can inspire other people, but it can't be done. You can't cheat people like this. You know, when in the Second World War, there was a ruse to fool the Germans by putting a dead body of a diplomat in the ocean, so he would be found by the Germans, and he'd have a briefcase with secret, you know, false information in it. So they did that, and they had a body which was suitable, but they couldn't. They had to give the body identity, but they couldn't do that because however many photographs they took of that dead body, it didn't look live. It didn't look real. I mean. No, the dead body needed identity papers, right? But they couldn't make it look real. It just looked, whatever many photographs they took, that body was dead. So that's because, of course, the spirit soul is not there. So when we're acting as spiritual living entities, then that is naturally happiness. When we're serving Maya, then that happiness is an illusory happiness, and it cannot be faked. You know, we cannot fake, if we're in illusory happiness, we cannot fake spiritual happiness by smiling. You know, like a monkey. You think a monkey is smiling, people go to India, right, and they laugh at the monkey, but the monkey gets angry. Why? Because when you show your teeth, to a monkey, that's a sign of anger. So some people get bitten by monkeys inadvertently. So anyway, the point is that it's because of the soul's presence within the body that the body has any value. Without the soul's presence, the body has no value. It is not a thing that, it is becomes a disgusting thing, not even to be touched. So, just like the body needs the soul's presence, so also what gives the living entity his status quo. The body has value because of the consciousness, presence of the consciousness. So what gives us status quo is the value of the presence of the super soul. Otherwise we have no status quo. Who we are is given to us by God. Our identity is given to us. Each one of us now, we have an identity. We identify with ourselves. We have so many designations, which we're not supposed to have, but we have so many. You know, I'm humorous, I'm knowledgeable, I'm this and that. We have so many designations. And when we wake up in the morning, we look in the mirror and we don't have any doubts about who we are, right? And I'm certainly quite different from anybody else. And we're all individuals, right? But where is that status quo coming from? It's nothing that we created, is it? No, we didn't create it. We got it because we desired it. According to our material desires, we got this body. But the status quo of our material body is maintained by the presence of the super soul. That's why we can remember who we are in the morning when we get up. As people who lose their memory, they have a great problem in life. They don't recognize anybody anymore. Can't relate to anybody as they did previously. So who is maintaining that? Atasmirtyam jnanam apoenam cha. From Krishna is coming knowledge, remembrance, and forgetfulness. So Krishna is the giving us our status quo. Not only the jivas are given status quo by Krishna, but also Brahman and Paramatma. They have no loka standing, no standing without Krishna. Because Krishna is the Supreme Lord, Krishna's two Bhagavan Swayam. Krishna is described in the scriptures as one without a second. That means there is no other existence except Krishna. It isn't that the world is all in all, comprised of material elements, and life comes about by interaction of material elements. That is the consciousness, that is the knowledge, that is what is accepted by materialistic people, mostly throughout the world, that we are a combination of chemicals, that life came about by from either came out of the swamp or an explosion. But where do you see that out of a bubbling swamp will come a beautiful woman? Or a brand new Rolls-Royce vehicle, shiny brand new Rolls-Royce vehicle. Do you see that coming out of the swamp? And what comes from an explosion of dynamite? What comes but chaos? What can come but chaos? So Krishna is the one without a second. Janmadyasa yataha anvayad itaratas chateshu. Krishna knows everything. He is God because abhigya svarat. He is abhigya means he is supremely cognizant, all knowledgeable. Anvayad itaratas chateshu means he knows everything. How does he know everything? Directly and indirectly. He knows everything. There is no corner of creation, either spiritual or material, that God is not aware of. And he is aware of it directly and indirectly. And the analogy is given just like an engineer. An engineer has a project. He's going to build something, like create a bridge or build a building. And that engineer, he knows everything about the construction, right? He knows if this is not done correctly, that this will happen. You know, if the concrete is not mixed properly, then the building might fall down after so many years. He knows the stresses. He knows all the ingredients in every part of the building. He knows why the building stays up and doesn't fall down. He even will give expectations of how long it will last before it becomes degraded. So Krishna is like that. Krishna doesn't need to know everything. Krishna is eternally living in Goloka Vrindavan. But it is by his energies that he performs all these wonderful activities. So there is Shakti and there is Shaktiman. Shaktiman is the possessor of energy, and Shakti is energy. So that is Krishna, Janmadyasa Yataha. Krishna is everything that exists, expanded personally as Svamsha and impersonally as Vibhinansha, as energy. So that is everything that exists, is Krishna. Nothing exists separate from Krishna. And Krishna is giving us everybody their status quo, and we are dependent on that one Supreme Lord. And to know this is devotional service. And to have this knowledge is what redeems us from illusion. See, otherwise, if we don't know Krishna, then because it's our nature to be servant, what are we serving? If we don't serve Krishna, what are we serving? If we don't understand the whole, the Purnam, the source of everything, who we are, our own identity, what are we serving? We're serving our minds. That is the six bad qualities of the mind. That is what we are serving. Karma, Krodha, Lobha, Moha, Mada, Matsara. Lust, anger, greed, madness, illusion, and envy. These things we are serving. If we are serving material nature, if we identify with our material bodies, we are serving those. They're sometimes described in the scriptures as whips. But where does that come from? If Krishna is the source of everything, then those things, those bad qualities, must be in Krishna, isn't it? If a thing exists in the material world, it must exist in Krishna. Because the material world is a perverted reflection of the absolute truth. So how can something that exists in the absolute truth, that doesn't exist, is there anything that doesn't exist in the absolute, that exists in the material world? No, it can't be. Everything that is in the material world exists in the absolute truth. So how do we understand about these bad qualities? Actually, it's described that irreligion is the backside of the Lord, and religion is the front side. So we are interested in the Supreme Lord. We cannot actually make nil or reject the bad qualities. They exist in the material world because they exist in Krishna. So what is the secret? Is knowledge of how to dovetail those qualities in Krishna's service. They can be dovetailed in Krishna's service. And then they are spiritual. Because that is the difference between matter and spirit. Anything used in Krishna's service is spiritual. And anything used in Maya's service is material. So knowing how to dovetail these things in Krishna's service comes from understanding these. What is the absolute truth? Is Advayam. Brahmeti, Paramatmeti, Bhagavaniti, Shabdate, non-advayam, non-dual, absolute truth, the source of everything. How to dovetail everything in Krishna's service, that is the process of devotion. How to do that, how to understand Krishna. It cannot be done with material intelligence. It cannot be done by using speculative methods. Like, you hear about Krishna and you might think, well, this is what's happening here, you know, according to my opinion, I believe, or as far as I can tell, this is what's, you know, you can't understand Krishna like that. And you can't understand Krishna by imaginary commentaries either. Like, this is what is going, so-and-so is thinking this because this and that. You cannot understand Krishna by these speculative or imaginary ways. How is Krishna understood? How is it we get real understanding of the absolute truth? What is the process? Yes, that is correct. And how is devotional service performed? It is said, Tarko Pratishtha, you cannot understand Krishna by logic, simply by argument. You cannot understand Krishna. You can go study all the scriptures, but you won't understand Krishna like that either. And you won't understand Krishna by listening to the philosophers, because every philosopher has a different philosophy, otherwise it's not a philosopher. So how do you understand? Yes, because Krishna is in the heart of the pure devotee. And this is the secret of actually acquiring knowledge, of getting off the mundane platform. And the secret is to accept Mahajana Yena Kata Sapanta, is to follow in the footsteps of exalted Vaishnavas, to follow in their footsteps. That is the secret, not by our own endeavors. And following their footsteps means what? It means to accept their guidance as given, without addition, without subtraction, is to accept their guidance. And Prabhupada gives in so many examples of how we do that. How do we follow in the footsteps? He gives the example of who? Arjuna, especially. Because Arjuna is speaking in the Bhagavad Gita. And Krishna, Arjuna says in the 10th chapter, 12, 13, I think it is, Prabhupada says, this is how we accept Krishna. So what does Arjuna says there? He says, Param Dharma, Param Brahma, Pavitram, Paramam Bhavam, right? I accept you as the Supreme Lord, Eternal, etc., etc. This is how Arjuna accepts Krishna. I accept everything you have said. Of course, originally, Arjuna was bewildered about his spiritual duty. But after having listened to Krishna, then he accepted everything. And so Prabhupada informs us that we should accept like that. If we accept like that, even though we may be foolish person, if we accept, then we understand. This is a transcendental process. We may go on speculating for millions of years and not understand, but by that simple process of accepting, how do we know that we've accepted? How do we know that we're serving pure devotees, serving Krishna, and we're not serving these bad qualities of the mind? How do we know? There is a way of telling, actually, whether we're serving materially or spiritually. Because if we can't recognize spiritual happiness, if we have not identified spiritual happiness, how is it we know that we're serving spiritually or materially? Prabhupada gives the example, you can test it yourself. If you're serving materially, you will be... Can we imagine what's our situation? If we're serving materially, how will we be? Yes, we won't be happy. One thing, we won't be happy. We will have no energy. Things will become hackneyed. Things will become stereotype, just formality. This is the danger. And what the danger of that is to continually serve materially is that eventually you feel disappointment. And you feel lack of encouragement. When you hear the philosophy, then you're not encouraged. You should be encouraged, because this is a sign that we're serving spiritually, that we are getting regularly encouragement in spiritual life. Regularly enthusiasm, new energy to perform devotional service. This is a sign we're serving spiritually, not to become disappointed, because when we become disappointed, then it is a big problem. Then we have to concoct so many reasons for this and that. And then we go back to the platform of duality, and we begin to have ideas like, think positively. Think positively. Don't think negatively, think positively. We think that. And Prabhu, why do you keep insisting on discussing the pitfalls of devotional life and the condemning material existence? Why don't you just speak about Krishna's pastimes and make us all happy? Why don't you encourage us? This is the kind of happening. When we're serving materially, this is the kind of consciousness we get. We no longer inspired by hearing, for instance, the futility of material life. See, the problem is we make compromises. We're serving materially. We need to find a place. We have to have some taste. We have to have some rasa. And if we're not getting it spiritually, we have to get it materially. And when you're still in the material world, and someone's telling you, Prabhu, if you're not Krishna conscious, you're going to hell, it's not something you really want to hear. So the secret is to accept. And if you don't accept, Acharyavan Purusho Veda, you have to follow the Acharya. Veda, according to the Vedas, the Acharya is setting the standard without interpretation, as it is, so that we accept, being obedient. Otherwise, if we rely on our own prowess, we will not be self-realized souls. We're not self-realized. If we think that we're the doer, if we rely on our own prowess, because Queen Kunti, in her prayers to Krishna, was very aware of our dependency on Krishna as being the basis of our status quo. Because in her prayers, she said, she was lamenting Krishna's departure, right, Queen Kunti. And she was saying that when you leave, all of us and the Yadus and the Pandavas, we will be what? You know that one word that she uses there? We will become what? When Krishna, when you leave Krishna, when you leave us, when you don't look upon us anymore, what will we become? Non-entities. Queen Kunti said that. Non-entities. Yes. She said, we will be non-entities. And she said also, because your footprints can be seen on the earth of the world, therefore everything is wonderfully arranged. There are minerals in the mountains, there are mountains of grains, everything is lush green grasses everywhere, everything is wonderful. Everything is beautiful. But when you leave, it will be finished. So, being our dependence upon Krishna means that we can do things nicely. Otherwise, that is one way we can tell who is actually happy, by the results of their activities. Just like if you have nice prasadam every day, different dish every day, right? Nice. For someone's cooking nice prasadam, making wonderful variety, you can't eat enough prasadam. Someone is dressing the deities beautifully, you know, and you think, oh my gosh, this is really Krishna. Or someone is making devotees. Because if we don't depend upon Krishna, we cannot do anything nicely. It's the secret. We cannot live on borrowed plumes, as it were. Living on borrowed plumes means that we take value in our own achievements. But what have we achieved? Arjuna also, he became bereft, right? He lost all his power. He had such power that the demigods were astonished by it. And how powerful the demigods, they can control the elements. They were astonished at Arjuna's power, but he lost his power, you know, that story. He couldn't even protect the wives of Krishna. There is a Leela going on, there is a story there, but what happened to Arjuna was that Krishna was separated. He was separated from Krishna, and he lost all his power, and he was admitting, I'm the same person. I'm Arjuna. I had the same bow, the same chariots, and I couldn't even defend these wives of Krishna. I couldn't even do it. He was in a terrible situation. It's like, how are we being maintained in spiritual life? By Krishna's mercy. It's very important to understand that, to be grateful for what the mercy that Krishna is giving to us. But if we want to be happy, then we have to get off the speculative platform and accept the knowledge of Krishna consciousness as it has been presented by the acharyas, by the mahajans, and by that simple acceptance we will progress in spiritual life. And like these queens here, these ladies here, they're discussing their great good fortune, and then as devotees, when we experience spiritual happiness, we'll be able to give it to other people. If you don't have it, how can you wish for other people to be happy? If you cannot wish for your own happiness, how can you wish for the happiness of anybody else? Especially if you don't know what it is. Hare Krishna. Does anybody have any questions, please, upon these points? Yes, Brahma.
Way back in the beginning, you were talking about us neophytes and how we are unable to recognize advancement in other spirit souls.
recognize the happiness.
The happiness.
That point specifically.
Because as Bhagavatam says that there are two people that are happy in this world, the fool and the transcendentalist. So I guess as neophytes, we can't see whether somebody's a fool or a transcendentalist. But more what I was thinking is, it kind of like in the beginning of the Krishna consciousness movement in the West, it was very sort of simple, it seemed, to see if somebody was actually Krishna conscious. You were either in or you were out. Now it's a very vague field. And like we have such a large community here, and who are we to judge whether somebody that we never see at the temple is more Krishna conscious than someone that we see at the temple? This, because that used to be the basis. You know, if you're at the temple, you're Krishna conscious. If you're not, you weren't. But it's really changed like that. So as a neophyte, it's really hard to understand, you know, who's a spiritual person and who's not. You know, so I was just wondering, maybe you could clarify, how do we actually get to the level of trying to understand someone's advancement or happiness in spiritual life?
Well, when we become purified, then, as Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, we will understand other people's happiness and distress by our own experience. We will know what it was to be an illusion. We will have practically experienced what illusory happiness is, and we will practically experience what is spiritual happiness. But how to recognize it in other living entities, their advancement, how do we? Because we follow in the footsteps of the Mahajans, and they are telling us the symptoms, how a person acts, right? There are so many things. You can take one instance, for instance, dress. Just take one little thing, how a person dresses. This is important. You can tell a person how they dress, isn't it? No one will ever convince me that there's something better than seeing an assembly of Vaishnavas all properly dressed. Grihastas in white, saffron, clean-shaven heads. There's nothing to compare with that. You think a room full of people in hoodies and jeans, blue jeans, is going to equate with that? You will not convince me. In fact, materialistic people have faith in us, who are beginning to have faith, they don't like to see us when we're wearing kami clothes. So now we are making issue. We're imagining that people will not become devotees because of the dress, you see. So that's an illusion. It's underestimation of the power of devotional service. I mean, that's one thing you can tell in dress. You can tell how a person speaks. In every aspect of our life, you can tell, because we have the information from the scriptures, from Srila Prabhupada. You may not know, according to your own discrimination, how a person is situated, but you give them the benefit of the doubt because they're behaving properly. If someone talks Pajalpa every day, are they advanced? If someone is overeating and not controlling their tongue, are they advanced? If someone is a gentleman, is he advanced or not? This is a more difficult point to understand, because there is a tendency for devotees now to be sympathetic towards cultural sophistication, you know, being agreeable to everybody, not causing any disturbance for anybody, always saying the priyam, the nice thing. But is that devotional? No, that doesn't qualify us to participate in sadhu sangha. What qualifies us to participate in sadhu sangha is what? Truthfulness and simplicity. Straightforward dealings. Is a person straightforward? You ask him a question, does he please you by his answer? Or do you leave more confused than when you started? There's so many aspects. We can go on forever discussing all these points. Even if we're not self-realized, because we have the scriptures, because we have the acharyas, their example, and their advice and guidance. Yeah. It isn't difficult, is it? It's difficult when we become bewildered. when we don't see through the Shastras, then it is a problem. When we see through the Shastras, when we take guidance, accept the version of the pure souls, then it is easy, not difficult. And especially, you know, as we get taste of spiritual life, then it becomes very easy. It doesn't matter how a person's dressed, that experience will be there. That joy, the joy of spiritual life will be there. It's not, you know, you have a conversation, you think, oh God, what was that about? I've got to go and sleep for half an hour. It'll be uplifting, you know. When you leave a class, you might, you know, if you hear a good class, your mind should be quietened. Quietened, you know. It's not you have a class and then 5 minutes later, everybody is blah, 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 talking pajapa non-stop outside. It can't be like that, you know. So there's so many things. We can discuss how to tell. Is a person want to preach? If you ask someone to preach, he's got a sacred thread, he doesn't want to preach. Is he a brahmana? Can't be a brahmana if you don't preach. It's the quality of a brahmana. You've got to behave as a brahmana. You have to preach. Do we have nothing to say about Krishna? Jai, thank you. All glories to you, Prabhupada.